And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I mentioned yesterday my wife had been attacked at Sam's, and the young lady monitoring the door refused to call security because she knew the attacker, and he was a good guy, spent a lot of money there. And the manager on duty refused to call me back when I tried to follow up with him. And finally he did, and he said, well, he had talked to the man, everything was settled, nothing to worry about. Well, it wasn't settled as far as we were concerned. And I had two calls yesterday from Gabriel, the actual manager. And a lot of good platitudes. They must have the same book. And I called this morning. Walmart owns Sam's. And my cousin used to own Walmart. Sam Walton. He's dead now. And I tried to get somebody to do something at Walmart about this, and they refused. Referred me to Sam's customer service line, and I needed a translator to talk to them. Finally, on my third try, I got through to somebody who had me go through this story for the fifth or sixth time. Oh, they were just so concerned. Yet, where was this concern when the person working the door wouldn't even call security? You're not safe at Sam's. And in Walmart here at Cella Vista Mall is where they had the massacre. 20-some-odd people were shot. And that's why they have off-duty police. Well, in this particular instance, the off-duty policeman had his cup of coffee at the far end of the building, and he was very careful not to spill it. So, I suggest you think twice before going into Walmart or Sam's, especially since Sam's bases its determining of how much safety you get based on how much you spend there. Well, be watching for this story to pop up on Fox News, because I am incensed at the arrogance I have encountered. All right, well, today's February 23rd, 54th day of the year. 311 days remain till this year's over with. This day in history, in 303, Roman Emperor Diocletian orders the destruction of the Christian church in Nicomedia, beginning 8 years of Diocletian persecution of Christians. At that point in time, Christianity was a cult. 532, Byzantine Emperor Justinian I lays the foundation stone of a new Orthodox Christian basilica in Constantinople. It's called the Hagia Sophia. It's still around today. In 1455, the traditional date for the publication of the Gutenberg Bible, the first Western book printed with movable type. 1554, Mapuche forces under the leadership of Lautaro scores a victory over the Spanish at the Battle of Marajenu in Chile. 1778, American Revolutionary War. Vern von Steuben arrives at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania to help train the Continental Army. 1820, Cato Street Conspiracy. Plot to murder all the British cabinet ministers is exposed and the conspirators arrested. 1836, Texas Revolution, Siege of the Alamo, which is a prelude to the battle at the Alamo, begins in San Antonio, Texas on this date. 1847, Mexican-American War, Battle of Buena Vista. Mexico-American troops under future President General Zachary Taylor defeat Mexican General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna. That was after he got defeated up here. 1854, the official independence of the Orange Free State is declared. I don't know why they didn't like oranges, but there you go. 1861, President-elect Abraham Lincoln arrives secretly in Washington, D.C. after the thwarting of an alleged assassination plot in Baltimore, Maryland. 1870, Reconstruction. Post-U.S. Civil War military control of Mississippi ends on this date, and the state's readmitted to the Union. 1883, Alabama becomes the first U.S. state to enact an antitrust law. 1885, the Sino-French War. French Army gains an important victory in the Battle of Dong Dang in the Tonkin region of Vietnam. 1886, Charles Martin Hall produced the first samples of aluminum from the electrolysis of aluminum oxide after several years of intensive work. He is assisted in this project by his older sister, Julia Brainerd Hall. 1887, French Riviera is hit by a large earthquake. 2,000 people are killed, give or take. 1898, Emile Zola is imprisoned in France after writing That was a letter accusing the French government of anti-Semitism and wrongfully imprisoning and capturing Alfred Dreyfus. Dreyfus was eventually cleared. 1900, Second Boer War. During the Battle of Tugela Heights, the first British attempt to take Harts Hill fails. 1903, Cuba leases Guantanamo Bay to the U.S. in perpetuity. 1905, Chicago attorney Paul Harris and three other businessmen meet for lunch to form the Rotary Club, the world's first service club. 1909, the AEA Silver Dart makes the first powered flight in Canada and the British Empire. 1917, first demonstrations in St. Petersburg, Russia. It's the beginning of the February Revolution. 1927, that led to the downfall, of course, of the Tsar. 1927, President Calvin Coolidge signs a bill by Congress establishing the Federal Radio Commission. Later, it became the Federal Communications Commission. It's supposed to regulate the use of radio frequency in the U.S. 1927, German theoretical physicist Werner Heisenberg writes a letter to fellow physicist Wolfgang Pauli, which he describes his uncertainty principle for the first time. 1934, Leopold III becomes King of Belgium. 1941, plutonium is first produced and isolated by Dr. Glenn T. Seaborg. 1942, Japanese submarines fire artillery shells at the coastline near Santa Barbara, California. 1943, the Cavan Orphanage fire kills 35 girls and an elderly cook. 1943, United Panhellenic Organization of Youth is founded in Greece as part of the Greek resistance. 1944, Soviet Union begins the forced deportation of the Chechen and Ingush people from North Caucasus to Central Asia. 1945, during the Battle of Iwo Jima, a group of U.S. Marines reached the top of Mount Suribachi on the island and are photographed raising the American flag. 1945, the 11th Airborne Division, with Filipino guerrillas, free all 2,147 captives of the Los Baños internment camp, where General Colin Powell would later refer to as the textbook airborne operation for all ages and all armies. 1945, the capital of the Philippines, Manila, is liberated by combined Filipino and American forces. Also in 1945, capitulation of German garrison in Poznan, cities liberated by Soviet and Polish forces. 1945, the German town of Forzheim is annihilated in a raid by 379 British bombers. 1947, International Organization for Standardization is founded. 1954, the first mass inoculation of children against polio with the Salk vaccine begins in Pittsburgh. 1966, in Syria, Ba'ath Party member Salah Jadid leaves an inter-party military coup that replaces the previous government of General Amin al-Hafez, also a Ba'athist. Speaking of inoculation, got my second shot yesterday. Aching today. Didn't ache the first time. 1971, Operation Lamson 719. South Vietnamese General Do Cao Tri is killed in a helicopter crash en route to taking control of the faltering campaign. 1974, the Symbionese Liberation Army. demands $4 million more to release kidnapped victim Patty Hearst. There's still a question about whether or not she was a part of it. A lot of the young wealthy, for some reason, do side with people like the Symbionese Liberation Army. They're almost ashamed of their wealth. Well, I've always said, if you're ashamed of it, give it to me. 1980, Iran hostage crisis. Supreme leader Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini states that Iran's parliament will decide the fate of the American embassy hostages. 1981, in Spain, Antonio Tejero attempts a coup d'etat by capturing the Spanish Congress of Deputies. 1983, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announces its attempt to buy out and evacuate the docks in a contaminated community at Times Beach in Missouri. Excuse me. 1987, supernova 1987A is seen in the large megalonic cloud. 1988, Saddam Hussein begins the Anfal genocide against Kurds and the Syrians in northern Iraq. 1991, in Thailand, General Suthorn Kongsampong leads a bloodless coup d'etat, deposing Prime Minister Chantisal Chunhavan. 1998, in the U.S., tornadoes in central Florida destroy damage 2,600 structures and kill 42 people. 1999, Kurdish rebel leader Abdullah Öcalan is charged with treason in Ankara, Turkey. In 2007, a train derails on an evening express service near Grayrig in Cumbria in England. Kills one and injures 88. This results in hundreds of points being checked over the UK for a few similar accidents. I remember a time when I didn't know what a doctor was. Now I got a doctor's appointment every other week. All right. 2008, U.S. Air Force B-2 Spirit bomber crashes on Guam. That's the first operational loss of a B-2 bomber. That's one of the stealth, I think. 2010, unknown criminals pour more than 2.5 million liters of diesel oil and other hydrocarbons into the River Lambro in northern Italy. Sparks an environmental disaster. 2012, a series of attacks across Iraq leave at least 83 dead and more than 250 injured. 2017, the Turkish-backed Free Syrian Army captures Al-Bab from ISIL. ISIL, the terrorist group. 2019, Atlas Air Freight 3591, a Boeing 767 freighter, crashes into Trinity Bay near Anhok, Texas. Kills all three people on board. Well, on this date, a lot of births and deaths. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Polycarp of Smyrna, Serenus the Gardener, Emperor's birthday, the birthday of Naruhito, the current Emperor of Japan, celebrated in Japan, Mashramani, Republic Day in Ghana, Matini in Latvia, National Day in Brunei, Red Army Day, the Day of Soviet Army and Navy in the former Soviet Union. It's also celebrated in various former Soviet republics. In Russia, we have Defender of the Fatherland Day. In Belarus, Defender of the Fatherland and Armed Forces Day. And in Tajikistan, Armed Forces Day. All right, let's see what else we got. Well, In 1540, Francisco Vasquez de Coronado's expedition sets off from Mexico. He's searching for the seven cities of Cibola, which was supposed to be somewhere in the American Southwest. 1574, France begins the Fifth Holy War against the Huguenots. 1660, Charles XI becomes King of Sweden. 1668, there's a fire in the Hofburg in Vienna. Emperor Leopold I is rescued. 1672, Joan Blouse Publishers in Amsterdam is destroyed by fire. 1689, Dutch Prince William III is proclaimed King of England. I think his wife's name was Mary. 1782, engineer James Watt's patent for a rotary motion for the steam engine. He called it the Sun and Planet Gear is granted. 1792, the Humane Society of Massachusetts is incorporated on this date. 1804, conspirators against Napoleon, who wanted to bring back Louis XVIII, are captured. 1813, the first U.S. raw cotton-to-cloth mill is founded in Waltham, Massachusetts. 1821, the College of Apothecaries, organized in Philadelphia. It was the first pharmacy college. 1854, Great Britain and the Orange Free State sign a convention of Bloemfontein. 1861, Dutch Premier Floris A. van Hall resigns. 1869, Louisiana governor signs the Public Accommodations Law. 1874, Major Walter Clopton Winfield bats a game that he calls Spare Stike, basically lawn tennis. 1883, the American Anti-Vivisection Society is formed in Philadelphia. 1886, a day that will live in infamy, the Times of London publishes the world's first classified ad. 1887, Congress grants Seal Rocks to San Francisco. 1892, the first college student government forms at Bryn Mawr University in Pennsylvania. 1896, the Tootsie Roll is introduced by Leo Hirschfeld. 1900, the steamer Rio de Janeiro sinks in San Francisco Bay. 1903, the U.S. and Cuba sign an agreement by which Cuba releases Guantanamo and Bahia Hondo to the U.S. for naval stations. 1903, the Sultan agrees to an Austro-Russian plan to reform the government of Macedonia. This was another effort to stifle the rising disorder among the rival Bulgarians. 1904, U.S. acquires control of the Panama Canal Zone for $10 million, and Jimmy the Peanut Man Carter gave it away because he was told to by his banker backers. 1904, having occupied Korea, Japan signs a treaty with Korea under which it becomes a Japanese protectorate in return for the Japanese protecting it from other powers. 1909, Russian Tsar Nicholas II dissolves the Finnish Diet. 1910, the first radio contest was held in Philadelphia. 1915, Nevada enforces the convenient divorce law. 1916, Congress authorizes the McKinley Memorial $1 gold coin. Benito Mussolini forms the fascist party in Italy. But it didn't give him any hair. All right. I think that's all the history we need to do today. We've been talking about the strange and the unusual. Yesterday was creatures of the jungle. Today we're going to talk about the supernatural. Now, in talking about the supernatural, you have to ask yourself, is seeing actually believing? For example, a magician levitates. Or in the case of one of the magicians, I can't think which one his name was, he walked through the Great Wall of China. Or maybe a fortune teller reveals details only you know. Or you're in an old cemetery and a ghostly apparition appears. So, frankly, everything you hold to be true yells at you, this can't be true, but you're looking at it. So let's talk about the veil between truth and fantasy. You never know what you're going to find. For example, let's start out talking about magic, witchcraft, and voodoo. Now, from the Circe of Greek mythology to the Old Testament's Witch of Endor, that King Saul consulted to summon the shade of a dead prophet, witches and sorcerers have been around since ancient times. But the familiar image of the shrieking old crone with a big nose and stringy hair comes from the 16th and 17th century, which was a period of religious upheaval, poverty, and disease. Now, the end time had appeared to be approaching, and of course, blame had to be assigned. So in came the witch, the instrument, if not the mistress, of the devil, casting spells and raising the dead. Men in positions of power, such as clergy and the magistrates, bolstered by a scared and ignorant populace, tried to root out witches among society's most powerless, misunderstood, and feared sector, women. The misogyny and witch hunting moved in tandem throughout history with women on the margins of society. The old, the childless, the widowed, the unmarried, the ugly, the free-thinking or independent, all had to endure the brunt of the season of witch frenzy. Now, the development of the printing press about 1440 A.D. spread images of witches across Europe. The template of the ugly old woman came from a 1500s engraving by the German artist Albrecht Dürer called Witch Riding Backwards on a Goat. In addition, a 1486 witch hunting handbook called Malleus Maleficarum, or The Hammer of Witches, became a century-long bestseller. It had very elaborate and certainly sexually obsessed theories and practical advice on how to hunt down, identify, and interrogate suspected witches. By some estimates, 200,000 Western Europeans, nearly all of them women, were tortured, burned, or hung under suspicion of being witches. And in the New World, we had the Salem Witch Trials of the 17th century Massachusetts that ended in the death of 20 suspected witches or their collaborators. And of that 20, 14, of course, were women. By the 18th century, Enlightenment ideas began to change some of the old superstitions. Witches were then seen more as symbols of societal ills and sources of sexual fascination. Francisco Goya's drawing serves as a model for what we think of today as the witch, a dried-up woman showing a pretty younger woman how to fly on a broomstick. Now, the word fly in Spanish had a double meaning. It was also slang for orgasm. And today, views are so softened that the Wicked Witch of the West can exist in the same cultural space as Hermione from Harry Potter or Sabrina the TV Witch. Real-life modern witches tend to practice Wicca, a pre-Christian tradition whose motto, to harm none, means living in harmony with nature, though persecution does continue throughout the world. As recently as 2010, suspected witches, both men and women, were beaten and slashed with machetes in New Guinea. Now, all warlocks, by definition, are witches. But not all witches are warlocks. Once, anybody could be a witch, man or woman, but by the Renaissance, the label increasingly took on a decidedly feminine shade that persists to this day. A male witch is now generally called a warlock. This distinction, of course, is basically semantics. But while the men could do all the same things the female version did, cast spells, cook up magic brews, levitate, they've been treated a lot better over the ages. In fact, only a few men were swept up in the witch trials in Europe and America. Tens of thousands of women were targeted. Proof that the most powerful spell cast upon the people has been sexism. You know, there was an English judge who, as a college student on a lark, wrote what he laughingly referred to as a magic spell. And, of course, over time, he lost track of it. And then he's a judge, and the case comes before him. A woman's accused of being a witch. And what her prosecutor said was she had to read this magic spell, and she could do all kinds of things. So the judge said, well, let me see it. And it was what he had written back in college. Now, there's a lot of, shall we say, spellbinders that have been talked about throughout history. Some are real, some are myth, and some are a little bit of both. One of the earliest was Morgan Le Fay. Now, for those who are familiar with the stories of King Arthur, Morgan Le Fay was said to be his half-sister. She was a fairy enchantress in the Arthurian legends who picked up her magic skills from books and from the wizard Merlin. And she assumes various personalities depending on the source material. Sometimes she's good. Sometimes she's bad. Sometimes she's a mixture. With a story that's rooted in Welsh legend, Fae, which means fairy or witch, is often cast as a sexually adventurous half-sister of Arthur, with a particular animosity toward his queen, Guinevere. In other versions, she's more of a healer who patches things up with Arthur and even takes him on his final journey to Avalon, where he supposedly waits for the time when he is needed to save England. Popular role in movies and plays and on TV, Faye's most recently been played by Elizabeth Hurley with a somewhat sinister edge in Marvel's Runaways on Hulu. And then we've got Gerald Gardner, who's actually the father of modern Wicca. He was English-born and went by his craft name Skyr, developed his interest in the mystical practices of native peoples while working as a civil servant in Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, Borneo, and Malaya. Returning to England after his 1936 retirement, he joined a cult group and was initiated into a coven, merging its rituals with ideas from the Freemasons, Celtic lore, Egyptian ideologies, and the writings of the most evil man alive, Aleister Crowley. Gardner formed Wicca, which he popularized in books like Witchcraft Today and The Meaning of Witchcraft. Has a lot of followers in the U.S. even today. Then we have Sybil Leek, with her trademark cape, gowns, crystal necklace, and a crow named Mr. Hotfoot Jackson perched on her shoulder. Leek was England's most famous modern witch, lectured and wrote extensively about the supernatural and the mystical. Claiming to be descended from an ancestral line of witches dating back to the 12th century, she preferred to call herself a druid. She said, witches are working class. Druids are the priest. Well, clash with the Witchcraft Research Association in 1965 prompted her move to the U.S. She died in Florida at the age of 82, in 1982 at the age of 65. She had written and published more than 60 books. At one point in time, she was said to be married to Hans Holzer, who I had the opportunity to meet at the Millennial New Year's party in New York City. And I had a great time talking about the occult. Then there's Mother Shipton. Now, she was a hideously ugly crone born in an English cave in the 16th century. Her name was Ursula Southwell, but she was known to history as Mother Shipton. She was a soothsayer and a prophetess who supposedly foretold several regional events. The damp, mossy cave of her birth has become a tourist attraction thanks to a petrifying well which turns objects into stone. Of course, science says they can explain that. The water's high mineral content is what causes things to become stone. Then we have the Wicked Witch of the West. Playing the most iconic movie witch of all time, Margaret Hamilton gave it her all and then some in 1939's Wizard of Oz. She endured toxic copper oxide makeup and suffered third-degree burns during the melting scene. But she gave it her all. Then Samantha Stevens, with a twitch of her nose. This is Montgomery's happy housewife, cast her magic and tangles with her disapproving literal witch of a mother in a TV show, Bewitched. Then in 1993's Hocus Pocus, we've got Winifred Sanderson, also known as Winnie, played by Bette Midler. She's a temperamental and vain witch who doesn't take kindly to being called ugly. She and her sisters, Kathy Najimy and Sarah Jessica Parker, wreak havoc on a small town on Halloween as they try to retrieve a book of spells and attempt to suck the life out of children along the way. Then we have Maleficent. Of all the Disney witches, the mistress of all evil from the 1959 animated feature Sleeping Beauty is the scariest and most complex, as she curses Aurora to perpetual slumber on her 16th birthday with a spell that can be broken only by true love's kiss. The character is brought to frightening life by Christian Bauer in TV's Once Upon a Time and Angela Jolie on the big screen in 2014's Maleficent. Then there was a sequel in 2019. Then we have the Witches of Eastwick. Cheryl Michelle Pfeiffer and Susan Sarandon joined Jack Nicholson's Horny Devil in the 1987 fantasy inspired by John Updike's novel. There are spells aplenty, but you won't hear the word witch mentioned once. Then here's Hermione Granger, created by J.K. Rowling and played by Emma Watson in the 8th Harry Potter movies. Hogwarts star pupil has it all, brain, sense, and sass. But she doesn't end up with Harry. Well, there's a lot of witches' tricks of the trade, so to speak. They used a variety of implements to practice their sorcery. There's the elixir of life. Drink this and you'll live forever. As far back as ancient China, alchemists have tried to cook up a potion that would guarantee immortality. But all too often, it caused the exact opposite. In the 3rd century B.C., the Qin Dynasty emperor sent an alchemist out to sea with 500 young men and 500 young women to find the elusive elixir. They never came back. Efforts at home proved no more successful. A Ming Dynasty emperor drank a brew with mercury and dropped dead. Centuries later, alchemists in the Dark Ages of Europe were consumed with the search for the Philosopher's Stone. That was a material they thought could turn base metal like mercury into gold and silver, or even achieve eternal life. In Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the equivalent of the Philosopher's Stone is described as a pearl in the possession of the Buddha. Well, let's talk about potions, which comes from the Latin word potio, meaning to drink. And these are liquids with powers to poison, transform, or bewitch that harken back to mythology. The ancient Greeks told stories about brews from herbs or pharmaka,
in which we get the word pharmacy, which can transform men into pigs and other animals. Brews of hallucinogenic plants and other strange ingredients also make ointments or witches' salves, as they're called. They promise to heal what ailed the body or the heart. One 16th century recipe claimed that a concoction of crushed earthworms and periwinkle would make somebody fall in love with you, if they could avoid the smell. How about the cauldron that's so famous in witch stories? The three witches of Macbeth famously stir a cauldron while chanting, "Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble." Now, Shakespeare wasn't the first to ascribe mystical powers to an otherwise common cooking instrument. The cauldron has been associated with witches because it symbolizes the womb, a place of transformation and creation, with its three legs representing the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. Well, something else associated with witches in the popular mind is the broomstick. For a really good time, people in the Middle Ages slathered the broomstick with a balm from ergo, a hallucinogenic fungus, on rye bread, and pressed the stick against the armpits, or in the case of a particularly witchy woman, between the legs, for maximum penetration into the glands. And once that was absorbed into the body, they started to fly. Well, the obvious erotic implication of a woman riding a big staff is echoed in racy engravings of the era. The image fed paranoia about female sexual power among most men. Then there's the grimoire. For as long as man could write, he's memorialized magical words on the surfaces. In 5th century B.C. Mesopotamia, it was clay tablets. In the Middle Ages, the classic books of spells were called grimoires, from the French word for books written in Latin, with the titles said to have been written by such unlikely authors as King Solomon, the Roman poet Virgil, Greek philosopher Aristotle, the mathematician Ptolemy. These books supposedly had instructions for casting spells, making charms, and summoning spirits, demons, and angels. And of course, what is a self-respecting witch without a wand? Well, for thousands of years before Harry Potter bought his first wand, the poet Homer placed a wand that he called a rod in the hands of the god Hermes to put people to sleep. By the Middle Ages, wands had morphed into the smaller, thinner sticks from trees felled by a single chop at sunrise on a Wednesday that we know about today. What happens if you do it on Thursday? Then, of course, we have the ever-popular spells that are sung, spoken, or chanted. The incantations have been around for as long as they've been enchanters and believers, going back to the first spoken prayers. The most famous one, abracadabra, comes from the ancient Greek word, abraxas. It's carved on charms and later invoked by a 2nd-century physician who prescribed malaria sufferers an amulet with the word written in the shape of a triangle to cure the disease. I don't think it was all that effective. Well, one of the most famous practitioners of magic, in this country at least, was a voodoo queen by the name of Marie Laveau. I went to her tomb in New Orleans, and people are still asking for her intercession. There was everything you could imagine laying on the ground outside her where she's buried. There was money. There were credit cards. You name it, it was laying there for the taking. And the guy giving the tour, I asked him, why isn't this stolen? He said, nobody would take anything from Marie Laveau. She will strike at you. Well, she rules the imagination of New Orleans. People think about her, claim to see her, have visions about her, dream about her, talk to her. Now, New Orleans has long been said to be a city of ghosts. And among those ghosts, hers is one of the most famous. Among the narrow cobblestone walkways of historic St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, where hundreds of dead folks lie in above-ground tombs, is that of Marie Laveau, The Voodoo Queen, an exotic, turbaned Creole who in life moves seamlessly through vastly different worlds, both slave and free, and who in death can't seem to rest in peace. Now, born in 1801 in New Orleans, she was a free woman of color. Of European, Native American, and Black Creole descent in the time of slavery, she was a devout Catholic who still practiced a religion of her African ancestors. She would attend Mass on Sunday morning. That afternoon, she would host voodoo ceremonies in a public square. Now, at night, the real rituals were held behind closed doors when people of all races came to her living room for a unique brand of voodoo that combined African, Catholic, and Native American traditions. With her big hoop, gold hoop earrings, shimmering in the candlelight, she dispensed good luck charms, told fortunes, sold healing remedies, and offered advice on everything from money problems to infidelity. Now, the city's elite confided their innermost secrets to her, and she later used those secrets to manipulate them. The point enslaved came to her for comfort and support. Living a few blocks from Bourbon Street, she welcomed orphans and slaves and Native Americans into her home. She paid for children's schooling and jail bonds for Black women held on petty crimes and ministered to death row inmates at New Orleans Parish Prison. Many a condemned man's last meal was actually her gumbo. Now, she died in 1881 at the age of 79. Was laid to rest in the tomb of her husband's family, the Glapions. Tourists make a beeline for that tall white tomb. Constant target of vandalism due to a legend that holds that anyone who etches three red X's on the stone will have their wish come true. Now, the tomb is now surrounded by fencing and protected by security cameras that never seem to capture Laveau's celebrated nocturnal stirrings. When I was there, there were no cameras and there was no fencing. There have been numerous sightings of the voodoo queen strolling the French Quarter in her red and white turban and reports of her pinching cemetery visitors she feels don't believe in voodoo.
Motion detected at the front door.
Now, contrary to popular belief, voodoo dolls, like those sold to tourists in New Orleans, have nothing to do with voodoo practices. Actual voodoo dolls and effigies are used for healing or communicating with the dead. The notion that pricking dolls with pins causes pain comes from American writings of the 20th century that combine European mystical traditions with racist views of Black Caribbean people. It can also be traced to a misunderstanding over a U.S. government ban on lethal dolls imported from Haiti in the 1950s. The problem wasn't that the dolls were used for evil purposes, but the castor beans that were used for the eyes were choking hazards for children that got them. Well, witchcraft has been around as long as there have been people. No longer practiced in the shadows, modern witches bear little resemblance to the cauldron-stirring crones of lore or the misunderstood, scapegoated women of frenzied witch hunts. And although there are sects of Satan worshippers and pagan cults, a typical witch today follows Wicca. And that's the religion that was popularized by Gerald Gardner. Now, famous magicians and mentalists have dazzled people with illusions that seem absolutely impossible. Until you go on YouTube and see how they were done. Even the greatest feat can leave an aftertaste, that feeling that somewhere, somehow, somebody's pulling a fast one on you. You just want to know the secret. But a select few magicians dazzle us so completely that we're left with its shock and awe. Let's talk about David Blaine. He kicks the danger level up a notch. He specialized in daring do that would have given Harry Houdini the shivers. In 1999, he buried himself in a plastic box beneath a 3-ton water tank for 7 days with only liquid nourishment. Houdini's niece, Marie Blood, said, "My uncle did some amazing things, but he couldn't have done this." Then for his next trick, Blaine is passing the torch to his daughter, Dessa. She was only 9 years old, but already a prodigy with card tricks. And she dazzled celebrities, James Corden, wouldn't have taken much to dazzle. Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen in an April 2020 TV special. Then we have David Copperfield. He's the one that made the Statue of Liberty disappear in front of a live TV audience in 1983. And he's also the one I mentioned earlier that walked through the Great Wall of China. Survived a plunge down Niagara Falls and escaped from Alcatraz. Of course, his greatest feat, when you get right down to it, has been his ability to make money appear. From his $4 billion in ticket grosses for his stage show to his real estate investments, he owns 11 private islands in the Bahamas. He's actually the richest magician in the world and said to be worth over $875 million. Well, let's talk about the amazing Kreskin. Once a fixture on TV in the 70s with his staggering 61 appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and he had his own special, The Amazing World of Kreskin, he continues to make predictions and read minds into his mid-80s, and still performing his classic trick, finding his paycheck that's been hidden by the audience. And though his act includes mind reading, he's never claimed to have psychic gifts. He says, I don't think of them as powers, but as abilities. One of the huge things I rely on is intuition, because I believe that empathy is the most priceless gift that we have. Then there's Uri Geller, the man who bends spoons. Achieving fame by bending spoons in the 1970s TV appearances, the British-Israeli mystifier claims to have discovered his special powers when he was 5, has quite a hold on popular culture. Even his scores of magicians have shown in YouTube videos exactly and how easily his spoon-bending trick can be done. Geller's suggestion in March 2019 that Britons use mass telepathy to stop Brexit made national news in the UK, proving his greatest gift may be his power to conjure up publicity. And impromptu, the most famous magician to ever grace a stage was Harry Houdini, the most renowned magician of all time. He was actually born Eric Weitz in Hungary in 1874. Dazzled vaudeville and silent movie audiences in the early 1900s with his death-defying escapes from handcuffs, chains, and ropes, often while hanging upside down and submerged in water. He went on to expose fraudulent mediums and psychics preying on the grieving and the gullible. He died in 1926 of a ruptured appendix, probably caused by a fan who hit him in the stomach. Houdini's wife held seances on Halloween for the next 10 years to summon the magician's spirit using a prearranged code message, Rosabel believes, before she gave up. She said 10 years is long enough to wait for any man, and she's probably right. Well, let's talk about superstitions. Well, superstitions aren't as crazy as you might think. Many fears and beliefs have historical, religious, and practical origins. And even if you don't consider yourself particularly superstitious, probably say bless you when somebody sneezes. Do you know that custom came about because years ago people thought the devil could steal a person's soul when he sneezed? Several hotels also didn't have 13 floors because of the belief that the number 13 was unlucky. We're going to talk about some of the more common ones. Don't open umbrellas indoors. While this may date to hiccups, ancient Egyptian types, using a papyrus and peacock feather parasol inside would insult the sun god. It's more likely relates to Victorian England when opening a newfangled spring-loaded metal-spoked umbrella in a room could poke out an eye or knock over valuable items. How about spilling salt, being an evil omen? The ancient Sumerians at 3500 BC were believed to be the first who thought tossing a pinch of salt over the left shoulder offset the bad luck from spilling salt, which was historically very valuable for preserving and seasoning food. In fact, it was so valuable at one point it was used as currency. In fact, the word salary comes from salarium, or salt money. Early Christians believed good spirits occupied the right shoulder, bad ones the left. To toss salt over your left shoulder sent it into the face of the devil. Excuse me. How about crossing your fingers? It's a religious symbol predating Christianity. The cross meant unity and power, with the midpoint possessing the most power for good. Initially, two people would cross their index fingers for luck. That then evolved into the single-handed gesture. When Christianity was illegal, Christians would cross their fingers to identify each other. What happens if you lost your fingers? How about the full moon? Well, the word lunacy actually comes from the Latin lunaticus, or moonstruck. Ask any cop or emergency room doctor and they'll tell you why. People really do act up when there's a full moon. Scientists are still struggling to figure out why. Linking mood-related disorders to changes in light at night or the gravitational pull from the moon. None of that seems to me to make much sense. How about knocking on wood? One of the oldest traditions of all time. Knocking on wood for good luck has been around from and used by everybody, from pagans who place their hands on trees to get favors from the spirits inside, to people who hit wood loudly to chase away bad spirits, and Christians who touch a crucifix when making a promise. Then, of course, we have the
motion detected at the front door.
Ever famous, break a mirror and get 7 years bad luck. Well, for first century Romans, if you broke a mirror, you broke the soul, forcing you to wait 7 years for it to be restored. Later on, during the Renaissance, silver-coated mirrors were so expensive that if an indentured servant broke one, he'd have to work 7 years to pay for it. How about the fact that a rabbit's foot is supposed to be lucky? According to Celtic beliefs, rabbits got closer to the underworld gods by burrowing into the earth. So carrying a little bit of a rabbit around fended off bad spirits. And that tradition reappeared in the American South, where rabbit feet were used as charms in hoodoo folk magic. And finally, how about walking under a ladder? First of all, who knows what can happen? What might be on the ladder and fall on you? And second, aside from the risk of falling paint cans and humans, the triangular shape of the ladder against the walls long held powerful symbolism. Early Egyptians saw triangles as sacred. Early Christians related it to the Holy Trinity, so walking through a leaning ladder would break the shape and bring misfortune or worse. Then later on, condemned prisoners had to walk under a ladder to get to the gallows. Well, let's talk about miracles. Near-death experiences and reincarnation. You know, astonishing miracles have been around
motion detected
for
at the
eons.
Front door.
When all the laws of nature and common sense evaporate, there's often no other option left but to believe and be inspired. So let's talk about some amazing events that struck a chord deep within people because they spoke to eternal truths. In 1531, we had Our Lady of Guadalupe apparition. An image of the Virgin Mary imprinted on a poor native peasant's cloak 500 years ago has actually never faded. Believers say the image was left there by Our Lady of Guadalupe herself. That cloak is now kept in the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City, which is the most visited sanctuary in Christianity. More than 18 million Catholic pilgrims go there every year. And if they each leave $3 or $4, that's a lot of money. Then we have the miracle of Lanciano. The monk who doubted Christ was really present in the Eucharist said the words of consecration. This is my body, this is my blood during Mass, and the bread physically turned to actual human flesh and the wine into human blood. Well, after investigating the account at the time in the city of Axenum, now called Anciano in Italy, the church declared it was an official miracle. A scientist who investigated the event in the 1970s found that the flesh and blood, which was displayed in the silver reliquary, were indeed human. Then in 1630, we have Joseph of Cupertino's levitation. Now, this was a friar from the Italian village of Copertino near Naples. Joseph, as his name, was said to have levitated in a trance-like state during Mass. Of course, he was immediately accused of witchcraft, denounced by the Inquisition, though contemporary observers raised the issue that he was probably mentally ill. But eventually, the event led to his canonization in 1767. Not surprisingly, the flying priest, as he's known, is now the patron saint of pilots, air travelers, and astronauts.
I wonder if he ever met the flying nun. Let's talk about Our Lady of Lourdes, Bernadette Siberius. 14 was gathering firewood when she heard a lady speak to her in a cave near the French town of Lourdes. That was the first of many Marian apparitions or appearances of the Virgin Mary that she claimed to have witnessed. The sanctuary of Our Lady of Lourdes was built on the site. It's got a spring that's said to have miraculous healing properties. How about the 1917 Miracle of the Sun? Large crowd gathered at a spot in Fatima in Portugal, where three shepherd children prophesied the Virgin Mary would perform miracles and witness the sun dance across the sky for a good 10 minutes. Skeptics point to numerous inconsistencies in the contemporaneous accounts and say the phenomena could be attributed simply to people staring too long at the sun. Others have said it may have something to do with UFOs. Well, in 1919, we have Padre Pio's Stigmata. This Italian priest claimed to have blood dripping from his hands, feet, and side in the same location as Christ's crucifixion wounds. Canonized in 2002, he's one of the most popular saints. His image is found on countless keychains, though at the time his claims were greeted with hostility from the papacy, which banned him from saying Mass, hearing confession, or displaying his wounds in public. Well, in 1972, we had a flight attendant take a big fall. Serbian flight attendant Vesna Vulovic survived a fall of 33,300 feet. She was the sole survivor when a suitcase bomb, in a baggage compartment blew up a DC-9 jetliner over Czechoslovakia. This was January 26, 1972. Suffering a fractured skull, three broken vertebrae, broken legs, broken ribs, and a fractured pelvis, she endured temporary paralysis from the waist down, but eventually made a full recovery. She survived because she was trapped by a food cart in the portion of the fuselage that landed at an angle on a snowy mountainside, which did cushion the impact. But certainly that was declared to be a miracle. Then in 1973, you got a weeping Virgin Mary, a wooden statue of Our Lady of Akita. That's the name of a statue of the Blessed Mother in a convent outside Akita in Japan. It wept, sweated, or bled 101 times, according to the nuns who lived there. Tokyo television station videotaped the weeping and an inspection of the liquids found in to be human fluid. Statue was created in 1960 by a Buddhist woodcarver. It's also credited with restoring a nun's hearing. And maybe it did. 2015, there was a miraculous call for help. A mysterious adult voice yelling, "Help me," led four police officers to rescue an unconscious 18-month-old girl strapped upside down in her car seat for 14 hours. The car was overturned in a Utah river. The child's mother was killed on impact when the vehicle went off the road and plunged into the icy Spanish Fork River. Police officer Tyler Badoes told the Daily Herald, "We heard a distinct female voice from the car saying, 'Help me, help me.'" It was kind of strange. Well, on that note, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll talk more about supernatural situations tomorrow. Well, once again, you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.